Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, where we highlight people and organizations who are doing great things and making a big impact in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Our goal for MPC, or Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, is to inform, inspire, and impact our listening audience. How we do that is by focusing on topics that are of importance to our community so that people are aware of the challenges that exist, and also so that they can learn about people who are out there trying to make a difference by offering various solutions. Today, our topic of discussion is about serving children and supporting families, specifically in the area of education and physical and emotional wellness. Why these focus areas? Well, take a listen to some stats. With regard to education, about 20% of school-age children learn differently, and roughly 32% of public school students have specific learning disabilities and need special education services. With regard to physical and emotional wellness, 60% of kids in the U.S. have been exposed to crime, violence, and abuse, either directly or indirectly. According to the CDC, at least 1 in 7 children experienced abuse of some kind in the past year. Now, these are just a few stats that highlight the need for support systems and programs for children and families. And we want to highlight two organizations who are doing something about it. My first guest today is Laura Rauman, who is an entrepreneur and owner of Vista 360, a business consulting firm. 10 years ago, she pivoted and founded a school and learning community to support neurodivergent individuals, their families, and caregivers. The name of that organization is called Bloom 360. Welcome to the show today, Laura.
Thank you, Jill. I appreciate being here.
You are welcome. Well, before we jump into your background, just define for us, for those who may not be familiar, what neurodivergent is.
Sure. Neurodivergent individual is someone whose brain works differently and processes information differently than what you would call someone who is neurotypical.
Okay. I said before in the introduction that you have a successful business consulting firm, mm-hmm. but what made you want to start a school?
Mm-hmm. So I have two children. My daughter, who is now 21, was struggling in traditional public schools. At the age of 3, 4, 5 years old, she was participating in the early childhood programs in the public school. And already at that point, I could see that the traditional environment was overwhelming to her. Her sensory system could not handle the amount of input, noise, busyness, lots of the visual stimulation. And then she wasn't learning. And she was reading books at home, but in school, she couldn't get past the first sentence in a book. Teachers didn't think she was comprehending anything. She didn't like going to school. She was fighting that process. And so at about the age of 6, I thought, well, she can't be hating school already. So we decided to try some other schools in the area, private schools, and those didn't work out either. Same kind of thing, too big, too noisy. And so at that point, we decided to homeschool. And I hired someone who had a background in education, and then I was able to continue some of her therapies that she needed. She has an autism diagnosis and sensory processing challenges, and we focused on her strengths. We high-interest activities and projects, did a lot around Disney, Walt Disney, and movies and shows and characters, and she really got into all of that. And we could really see her shining and starting to thrive. And so about a year in, I said, we should start a school. Because I know there's other families out there who are struggling and need something like that.
Okay, so give us more information about Bloom 360. For example, the name, what it means, mm-hmm. how long you've been around, and why, over and above the obvious, did you feel that it was needed?
Mm-hmm. So Bloom 360's name is very intentional. Bloom meaning given the right supports and tools, individual can bloom and thrive. 360 meaning we had to take a whole person approach and a whole family approach, honestly. When a child is suffering in school and struggling, the whole family is impacted, and it's very, very stressful. And so we end up also working with families and counseling and sharing information and supporting. And we aren't just a school. We're a learning community. All of us are learning every day, mm-hmm. but we also offer community workshops. We have a parent support group that meets monthly. So it's the child, and it's also the family, and it's the adults caring for those children.
And which I love all of that. I think the support piece is so, so crucial. Tell us what you think makes you different.
Yeah, so we lead with social emotional learning. Our root of our model is based in human development. So we are not a behavioral based model. We are a human development model, which means we meet that person where they're at developmentally. That could be social, emotional, or academic, or a combination of all three of those things. We lead with social emotional. So once someone feels safe, they feel supported, they feel their emotions are being heard, and they can start to understand and identify their emotions and those feelings they're having in their body and what that means and how that might impact their learning. Then we can start to teach the academics, and the academics then come. And then you really see, like, we're cooking with gas, right? Like, they are just thriving. And then they start to come up with ideas for projects, and they really start to gain confidence. They're happy. They're excited to be at school.
Which is what you want for your children.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, it goes without saying, but not every child develops or learns, as you said, at the same pace or in the same way. I think mm-hmm. the best way to share how your services and your support have made a difference for someone is for that person to share themselves what it's been like for them or a family member to be involved. We have a special guest with us today, Erica Kochansky, who is the mom of Juliet. And Juliet is a learner at Bloom 360. Welcome to the show, Erica. Can you tell us about Juliet and why Bloom 360 is such a good fit for her and for your family?
I'd love to. Thank you. So my daughter, Juliet, is like Laura's daughter, autistic. She's 15 years old, and she will be starting her fifth year at Bloom 360 this fall. Like many neurodivergent individuals, as Laura said, traditional public school just was not meeting her needs. She was in school until fourth grade, at which point we decided to homeschool her. As you see children get older in the public school system, oftentimes their class sizes get much larger, and that's what happened for us. And instead of being able to be in the classroom learning with her peers, Juliet was completely overwhelmed by all of the sensory information. 30 plus kids in a classroom just wasn't tenable for her. Mm-hmm. So her stress level was so high, she just was not able to regulate her emotions, her behavior. She didn't want to go to school anymore. Mornings were not fun. I often had to go to school during the day with her little sister in tow to pick her up before school was over, just because she couldn't manage. So I had been following Laura and the school for a while. And during COVID, we just had the opportunity. We had our whole family at home. We said, we're going to do this. And we moved a little closer to Bloom, and Juliet took a little bit of time to get comfortable, but once she was and she was feeling safe, she could actually learn. So for Juliet, the best parts of Bloom are the fact that it is not chaotic. It is calm. It is welcoming. She has made friends who understand her and who she understands. Everyone is just so understanding and compassionate, willing to let her take a break when she needs one. They've helped to teach her how to know when to take a break and what that looks like. Lots of one-on-one teaching and learning, small group learning, project-based learning. So much is taught about our emotions, what we can do to help ourselves. I've just seen so much growth and maturity, and she looks forward to going to Bloom 360 in the morning. Mm. Like, she looks forward to seeing her people, and she's happy, and our family is much happier.
Yes. I mean, I know they say happy wife, happy life, but happy child, happy family, right?
I think that's spot on.
Yeah. And Juliet has blossomed, or she's bloomed, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's always great to hear these great impact success stories. Yeah. Well, there's so much really interesting things that are going on in the mix at Bloom. And Laura, you've also got something new that you will be bringing to the already robust programs that you offer. But we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we return, we'll hear what innovative twist makes it unique to your model. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking again with Laura Rauman, founder and president of Bloom 360, and Erica Kochansky, parent of a Bloom student. So you have this new program for neurodivergent young adults. Do share what it is and what the innovative twist is that makes it unique.
So the program is called BizPath. It's for young adults in their 20s, early 30s. What makes it unique and the twist is that it's focused and around a microbusiness, the idea of learning roles within a business using a microbusiness at its core. So I'm very excited about this, given my background in being an entrepreneur and a business person. This has always been near and dear to my heart. We've done little pilot projects within the day school around little mini microbusinesses, but this is our first launch into something that the learners can actually apply for jobs. They can apply for the marketing position. They can apply for the finance position. They apply for the, you know, supplies position, the shopping, the budgeting, all of those things. And we rotate so that everybody kind of learns how to do those different roles, how to apply for a job, how those work. They can practice all of those things. Our first launch is going to be a hot lunch program at Bloom 360 for our day school learners that they will be executing on. So this is something very familiar, right? So we start with a familiar, you know, environment, but we add in some of these new components. And then once they get that down, then we start to see more organic ideas from the learners of like different projects they might want to work on that are more like a micro business. Then eventually, this is a 3-year program. Eventually by year 3, then the hope would be that they would be able to develop their own micro business. And nice. Then from there, we'll see where it goes. You know, we may have businesses popping up and down, and like, it won't just be a 3-year program, right? And the idea is that then this is gainful either employment for them, or they have skills they can take to another situation.
Yeah. And I like that you're teaching those soft skills, like communication and some of those things that well, everybody needs, right? You're teaching interviewing skills when you said that they're interviewing for these different positions. That's really great. So it's called BizPath. So if you're listening and that sounds intriguing to you, you're going to want to check that out. Well, this is obviously a private school and families pay tuition. For some families, though, that can be daunting. So how do you improve access to this special education that you provide?
Mm-hmm. So as a nonprofit, we also do fundraising events, we write for grants, and we've established a scholarship fund for tuition and also for our transportation program. So families are able to apply for scholarship. It is need-based, but because of the amount of tuition, we always encourage everyone to sort of, if they have any desire to pursue something like that, they should go ahead and apply. Last year, we gave out over $30,000 in tuition assistance. This year, it was over $40,000. And I would expect with some of the cuts we're seeing in other funding sources that is just need is going to continue to increase.
Mm. And then if someone listening wants to start the application process, is that on your website?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Well, this is a question that we like to talk about and that people actually ask if they're interested in supporting your organization. How do you know that what you're doing mm-hmm. is actually working?
Yeah, so we measure our growth. And I can give you some of that information quickly. It's also on our website. We have our learners experience 15% average annual growth in their social emotional goals every year. They experience 16% growth in their life skill goals. And from an academic standpoint, our learners average 3.74 on a 4-point scale. Most of our learners are achieving over 11 academic goals every year. And school-wide, we had over 40 projects that were completed last year.
Very nice. Erica, you want to weigh in on any of those things, either the private school tuition, or how do you know that what they're doing is working for Juliet?
Sure. I will say that going to Bloom 360, it's been an investment, but it's one of the best investments we have ever made as a family, and it will continue to pay dividends throughout my lifetime and my daughter's lifetime and beyond. I couldn't be more thankful to Laura.
That's wonderful. We're an investment firm. We like to hear about dividends and investments. So that's all good stuff. Laura, what would you say is your greatest need right now? So people are listening. They understand the great work that you're doing. But there are always needs out there. Mm-hmm. If someone wants to help support you in some way, what would you say to them? How they could help?
I think our greatest need is to donate to our scholarship fund. And you can find donation information on our website at bloom360.org.
Okay, so bloom360.org, very straightforward. I'm going to just share this phone number, too, in case someone wants to give you a buzz, 414-935-6360.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. You're listening and you're interested in what Bloom 360 has to offer, just Google them. Bloom 360. Okay. Thank you, Laura Rauman and Erica Kochansky, for being here today and sharing how you're serving children in the best of ways. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jill.
I mentioned at the start of the show that we were going to focus on serving children and supporting families, specifically in the area of education and physical and emotional wellness. So you learned about Bloom 360 and what they're doing in the area of education. Now let's talk about the physical and emotional wellness piece. We know that there's definitely a need in this area, given the stats I shared on the topic. I'll repeat them for your reference. 60% of kids in the U.S. have been exposed to crime, violence, and abuse, either directly or indirectly. And according to the CDC, at least 1 in 7 children experienced abuse of some kind in the past year in the United States. It's heartbreaking. All types of abuse leave scars. So the earlier that children and families receive help, the greater chance they have to heal. After a short commercial break, we're going to learn about an organization that is offering a solution. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is Coco Cooper, Executive Director of the Treehouse Child and Family Center, which is a nonprofit serving Walworth County and surrounding communities through child abuse awareness, prevention, and education. So, Coco, I understand that for much of your career, you worked in the fields of arts and education. So what brought you to the Treehouse?
I've served as executive director for just over 3 years, but the Treehouse has been near and dear to my family for many years, actually since 2009, when my mom joined the organization's board of directors. My mom, Margaret Downing, was a community leader and business owner in Walworth County. She was raised with 12 brothers and sisters. The family she went on to raise is pretty large, 5 children, 10 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren. So family really meant everything to her. And the idea that anyone could ever hurt a child was just something she could not wrap her head around. Her nickname in some circles was Dragon Lady. She had a persuasive, and that's a euphemism for pushy, way of getting those around her involved in different causes. So when she signed up for a cause, if you were her family, her friend, her neighbor, her colleague, maybe even her enemy, you understood you were signing up for that cause as well.
Mm-mm. I like your mom already. Dragon Lady, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
fiery redhead.
Everybody needs that person that has the strengths to get the job done. Sounds like that's your mom. Before we talk a little bit more about the role she played in the organization, tell me how the organization itself got started.
So the Treehouse has existed in different iterations since 1989. It first began in response to a case of child maltreatment in Walworth County. A 3-year-old had been sexually abused by the mother's boyfriend while the mother was driving the babysitter home. Prison was recommended, but instead probation was given. And there was a local community member who'd been following the case, and he was so upset that he actually began a recall effort for that judge. The district attorney at that time was a gentleman named Phil Koss. And DA Koss met with the community member and said, let's make something positive happen here. Instead of the recall, they reached out to the judge and they asked if they could convene a children's court advisory board on the topic of child abuse. And to his credit, that's what the judge did. So for nearly 20 years, that advisory board was led by volunteers from law enforcement, corporation counsel, child and family advocates. And they were all committed to strengthening policies, protocols, getting statutes passed, including the Repeated Act statute, and increasing penalties that would better protect children in Walworth County from abuse.
Mm, wow. Don't even get me started on a story like that. I mean, when you have children, it's terrible enough as it is, but when you have children, oh my goodness, 3 years old, terrible. And as I understand it, this awareness of the need to do better for children wasn't unique to what had happened in Walworth County. Around that same time in the late 80s, there were cases around the country that were inspiring this fresh look at how to help children who had been abused.
Yes. So there is a gentleman. He was a district attorney from Huntsville, Alabama. He was the district attorney of Madison County in Alabama, Robert or Bud Kramer. And D.A. Kramer realized that the system that was supposed to be protecting children who had been abused was causing them to have to relive that abuse over and over, because the children would have to go talk with different people about what had happened to them. They'd have to go to different places, law enforcement, hospitals, etc. Essentially, they were reliving the trauma over and over every time they had to tell their story to someone new. And in response, D.A. Kramer spearheaded the creation of what is now known as a Child Advocacy Center, or what you may hear referred to as a CAC. And the CAC was designed to improve the system for responding to child abuse cases, because in that CAC model, all those different professional service providers who a child used to have to go to, instead, they all come to the child under one roof. And that helps reduce the trauma of having to tell that story over and over again.
I can't even imagine. And do you think a case that happened all the way down in Alabama played a role in the history of the treehouse?
It absolutely did. So all those volunteer from different professional disciplines who were working as part of the Children's Court Advisory Board in Walworth County, they became familiar with the Child Advocacy Center, or CAC, model that D.A. Kramer had created in Alabama. And they wanted to build a facility that would house a CAC in Walworth County. But now, in order to build that facility, they knew that not only would they need to continue raising awareness, now they needed to start raising funds. So it was at that point, in about 2007, that they formalized as a nonprofit, which became known as the Walworth County Alliance for Children, or WCAC. So that was another iteration of the treehouse.
Okay. And would I be correct in guessing this is around the time that your mom joined the organization?
Yes. So my mom greatly admired a philanthropist from Walworth County, Sal DiMicelli Sr. Sal had heard about this group of community members who were raising funds to help abuse children, and he knew this was a cause for the Dragon Lady herself. So my mom was involved with the organization for less than 10 years, but during this time, she served as president of the board of directors, successfully sought a land donation from Walworth County, rallied community support, and she spearheaded a building campaign so that Walworth County could, in fact, open the doors to a private standalone child advocacy center, which they did on April 15th, 2013. And in fact, if you come to our facility outside the front door, there is a plaque in my mom's honor.
How wonderful. How wonderful. But the child advocacy center that was realized in 2013, it was a dream realized, but it doesn't sound like the effort stopped there.
No. So just some quick statistics I'd love to share with you. Of the 76 million children in the United States, 45 million are expected to experience some type of trauma or victimization before they reach the age of 18. One in 10 children will be sexually abused before they turn 18. Only 24% of children will disclose immediately. Less than 25% will disclose 1 month to 5 years after the abuse. And almost half will wait more than 5 years to disclose. And this is the part that always gets me, if they disclose at all.
Yeah.
Now, these may be current statistics, but they're not new statistics. It was a great moment when the doors to the Walworth County Child Advocacy Center opened in 2013. But everyone who was involved in the organization knew that we couldn't rest on our laurels and that there was still much work to be done around child abuse prevention.
And then is this why the name of the organization changed a few years after the doors to the facility opened?
Yeah. So in 2017, the board of directors decided to rename the organization to what it's known today, the Treehouse Child and Family Center. Part of this was because the name under which they'd originally incorporated, the Walworth County Alliance for Children, having Walworth County in the name, it gives that implication of this is government funded, which is not the case. It was not then and is not now anything other than privately funded. The other reason, though, is that stopping child abuse means helping more than just children. It means getting upstream of the root causes of child abuse to help to strengthen families who may be struggling, get them access to services and support. And it means raising awareness and providing education to entire communities about the different forms of child maltreatment, how to spot signs and symptoms of child maltreatment. What do you do if a child tells you that something is making them feel uncomfortable or unsafe? How do you be a safe adult for the children in your world, whether they're your own children, your grandchildren, children with whom you work, etc.? So it was important that children and families be part of our name because that really reflects the growth of the organization.
And you changed the name, as you said, from Walworth County Child Advocacy Center. It just makes me ask this question. Do you serve families and children outside of Walworth County then?
That's a great question, and we do.
Okay.
So if we have a service, a resource, a program, then we cannot find a corresponding support for the family in their community because obviously for transportation reasons, it may be easier if we can get them connected in their community. But if we can't find that support, we absolutely will welcome them to our programs, our services, et cetera.
Okay, wonderful. Again, there's that collaborative approach that if you don't have, for whatever reason, what that child or family needs, you can provide the resource. That's great.
It takes a village.
Yeah, that's for sure. And when you joined the Treehouse as the executive director, I'm sure your mom must have been very proud.
We actually lost my mom. This is a hard question to get through. We lost her unexpectedly on July 3rd, 2019. I joined as executive director in February of 2022. So my mom never knew that I am leading the helm. But this is actually kind of funny and embarrassing to admit. But the Treehouse hired its first full-time employee, actually, in 2013 when they opened the doors to the facility. And I remember asking my mom, can I see that job description? She said, I don't think that's a good fit for you.
Ah.
My mom was very complimentary of my nonprofit experience. She loved the skill set that I was building. My mom was a great fundraiser, but even for her, hearing these stories of what children were going through who experienced maltreatment, she couldn't do it. And as much as she wanted to protect children, I was also her daughter, and she wanted to protect me as well. So I think that was just, she thought it might be a little too hard for me. Also funny, though, at that time, there was another member on the board of directors. His name was Louis Lauderdale. He was in law enforcement, and my mom really admired Louis. Louis had a young daughter, and my mom would always say, you know, I think Louis kind of hopes that his daughter goes on to have something to do with the Treehouse. So not only would my mom, I hope, be very proud that I am leading as executive director, but my very first hire when I joined the organization was Louis' daughter. And she is truly her expertise in the field of child maltreatment. She's a force to be reckoned with and is doing amazing things for the Treehouse.
That is awesome. And I just want to say that your mom does know.
Thank you.
She does know. It sounds like there's some fate at play here, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to hear what Treehouse is doing today to help those children and families. So stay tuned and we will be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm talking in our last segment with Coco Cooper, Executive Director from Treehouse Child and Family Center. And also joining us in this segment is the daughter of that gentleman that Coco talked about, Kyle. Stop. Kyle. Oh my gosh.
And Ellen, I just realized I forgot to say how happy I was to be here. So I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I will thank you again at the end.
Thank you.
You can do it again. Okay. Faith, zip that. We're going to redo it because I screwed up on the name, even though I have it right there, right in front of me.
That's all right. I'm glad you did it before.
Kyla. Okay, here we go.
Kayla.
Thank you. There we go. Right. Yeah. Kayla. It's right there. K-A-Y-L-A. Right there in front of me. All right. Here we go again. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And I'm talking in our last segment today with Coco Cooper, Executive Director from Treehouse Child and Family Center. And also joining us in this segment is the daughter of that gentleman that Coco was talking about, Kayla Lauderdale, who is the Program Director and Walworth County Sensitive Crimes Team Coordinator at the Treehouse Child and Family Center. Thanks for joining us for the interview today, Kayla.
Thank you to Ellen Becker Investment Group for the opportunity.
You are certainly welcome. Well, it's quite a mouthful there. The program director, Walworth County Sensitive Crimes Team Coordinator, that's really something. I understand that prior to coming to the Treehouse, you were a forensic interviewer with Children's Wisconsin, and you interviewed roughly 1,600 children who had experienced trauma or child abuse. Impressive. Tell us how you're defining child abuse. I think that's important before we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So child abuse refers to any act or failure to act by a parent, caregiver, or other responsible adult that results in harm, potential harm, or the threat of harm to a child. So there's four different types of abuse. There is physical abuse, which is the intentional use of physical force that results in or that has the potential to result in physical injury. There's also sexual abuse, which is the involvement of a child in sexual activity that they cannot consent to. There's emotional or psychological abuse, which is repeated behaviors that harm a child's self-worth or emotional well-being. And then there's neglect, which is the failure to meet a child's basic physical or emotional, medical, educational needs. Okay. And there's often this perception of stranger danger, but I think it's important to note that in 2002 alone, 76% of children were victimized by a parent or a legal guardian, and on average, 9 out of 10 children are victimized by someone that they know and trust.
Mm. Again, that just is so frustrating. Mm. So frustrating. Explain the role of this forensic interviewer in the context of child abuse.
Yeah, so that was my previous role through Children's Wisconsin, wherein I interviewed 1,600 children over the 5 years that I had that role. And a forensic interviewer plays a vital role in child abuse investigations by conducting a neutral, fact-finding interview with a child who has experienced child abuse or witnessed any kind of abuse, neglect, or violence. These interviews are carefully conducted by specially trained individuals, and they follow a particular set of guidelines that are designed to gather reliable information while also minimizing trauma to the child.
Hmm. Well, and all great experience for sure. Now you're the program director at the Treehouse Child and Family Center. How do you feel that your role has changed in the prevention of child abuse?
Yeah, I didn't grow up planning to work in child abuse prevention. Like many people, I assumed that abuse was rare and something tragic, but also something far away. And through my early work as a social worker and a forensic interviewer, I saw the impact of abuse up close. I heard the experiences of children who were hurt by the very people meant to protect them. I witnessed the long-term impacts of trauma as it rippled through generations. And these kids needed systems. They needed prevention. And what struck me the most during my time as a forensic interviewer was not just the pain of the abuse, but the silence that surrounded it. The way children were expected to carry invisible burdens, the way family felt shame instead of support, and the way that we as a society often waited to act until it was already too late. And that's when I realized we don't just need more people responding to child abuse. We need more people preventing it. We need stronger families, earlier interventions, and communities that see child well-being as a shared responsibility. So every family has strengths, and every child deserves to grow up safe, seen, and supported. That belief and the kids who needed someone to believe in them, that's what really called me to this work.
Hmm. Well, and as the program director, you serve as the Sensitive Crimes Team Coordinator for Walworth County. Tell us what this Sensitive Crimes Team is exactly.
Yeah, so we can't do this work alone. Multidisciplinary teams are essential in responding to cases of child abuse and neglect because they bring together a specially trained team of professionals from different fields to coordinate a comprehensive, child-centered, and trauma-informed response. So no single agency can effectively address the complex needs of a child who's experienced abuse. So here in Walworth County, our multidisciplinary team is referred to as the Sensitive Crimes Team. Because they investigate not only child maltreatment, but also drug-endangered children, human trafficking, sexual assault, and elder abuse. So this team meets regularly to review cases, share information, update protocols, and coordinate efforts with victim safety, healing, and justice at Center Focus.
And then how do you move the needle on this child abuse prevention?
Yeah, in my role as the Sensitive Crimes Team Coordinator and also the Program Director, I oversee updates to the countywide protocols for child maltreatment. The Treehouse also organizes and provides fiscal support for multidisciplinary team members to get training to elevate the level of services that they're providing child victims. And those trainings are attended by law enforcement, health and human services, advocacy agencies, child advocacy center staff, and corporation counsel. And then this year, the Treehouse is also launching a new initiative for Walworth County, which is the Walworth County Child Abduction Response Team, or also known as a CART. And a CART is a multi-agency team that's trained to respond in the search for and the recovery of endangered, missing, or abducted children. So We will be partnering with the Amber Alert Program and the National Criminal Justice Training Center to offer a two-day training to professionals that are interested in becoming involved in that child abduction response team that will hopefully provide a rapid and comprehensive community response to recover a missing or abducted child if that happens in Walworth County.
All great things. And, you know, we've talked briefly, albeit briefly, about the programs and the resources for adults, but it's also important that you reach children directly, right?
Absolutely. Talking with children about safety is vital in child abuse prevention because it equips them with the knowledge, language, and confidence they need to understand unsafe situations and seek help. So the Treehouse utilizes an evidence-based curriculum from the Monique Burr Foundation. It is the Child Safety Matters curriculum. And we can present that at schools at no cost to grades pre-K through fifth. Just to start those conversations with children and to make it more difficult for abusers to isolate, manipulate, and silence kids. All those lessons are presented in an age-appropriate way. And one thing that I really love about the curriculum is that it teaches children who their safe adults are and asks them to identify the safe adults in their lives so that they know who to turn to, who to trust, and who to talk to when they need help.
So important. All those things are so important. I mean, at one point, you made reference to it earlier, Kayla, that I don't think people realize the severity of it. Mm-hmm. You know, they just may not know. That's why it's important that we bring awareness to it and certainly highlight the positivity around the people that are doing something about it. Many of the programs and the resources we've talked about are designed to help stop child abuse before it starts. Are there programs or support that the Treehouse offers to children and families who unfortunately have already experienced abuse or trauma?
Yeah, positive childhood experiences can help mitigate the impact of an adverse childhood experience. And they're increasingly being integrated into the programs that we offer at the Treehouse. So we have several programs that focus on providing children with positive experiences through birthday support, like birthday cakes, party supplies, gifts. We have a holiday elves program that we run in the winter that provides holiday gift assistance. We also have scholarships for kids and sponsored summer camps in the past. Most recently, we supported a bedroom restoration for a child who had experienced sexual abuse in her bedroom. And it wasn't just about changing the paint and the furniture, but it was about helping her reclaim a sense of safety, control, and comfort in a place that once felt incredibly unsafe for her.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. We just don't have enough time to get to all the great things that we could be sharing today. The idea is just that we plant that little mustard seed so people become aware that this great organization exists and you reach out to get more information. But Coco, if you could share with us, for those that might be aware or might be wondering, what would you say is your greatest need right now and how can people help?
Absolutely. Our greatest need is for people to be the safe adult that every child deserves, be someone who believes in them, supports them, and helps them feel safe. People can also invite the Treehouse to speak at their school, their workplace, or organization, or visit the Treehouse website at treehouseforkids.net to learn more about how you can get involved, support our mission, and become a champion for child safety.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, one more time, contact information, the best way to get to you.
treehouseforkids.net.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And if somebody Googles Treehouse, will they get to you?
Treehouse Child and Family Center.
Okay, make sure you spell that all out and then yep. you'll get directly to them. All right, well, I want to thank my guests today, Coco Cooper and Kayla Lauderdale from the Treehouse Child and Family Center and Laura Rauman from Bloom 360. Thank you all for sharing the ways that you support children and families. I really appreciate you joining us for the interview today. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to Bloom 360 or to the Treehouse Child and Family Center. And if you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think would be a great guest on our show, you can email me at jill@ellenbecker.com. If you'd like to learn more about the ways that people and organizations are contributing to making our community a great place, I suggest you tune in to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, Sunday mornings at 10 on News Talk 1130 on your radio, your computer, or your cell phone. And you can also visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired shows. You can also listen on demand. And if you're interested in making a difference in some way for someone in our community, whether that's by donating, volunteering, or advocating, find an organization that aligns with your interests and giving goals. Learn about their mission, their vision, their purpose. What is it that they specifically do, and who do they serve? And then determine how best you can be a blessing and give a blessing. Thanks for listening today, and have a great day.